Well, we've made a lot of demands. We made a lot of demands that they stop stereotyping the Mexican as sleeping under a cactus and lazy and no good and worthless and treacherous and killers and and to give some meaningful parts and hire people that can help them do this. And they listened, and they listened, and they that's the reason I got the job at ABC. That's the reason a lot of people got a jobs in the television industry, and a lot of people started working in the movie industry. Still, it's not there, but I mean, it was. But it was wild times.
What sort of actions did you take to get the attention of the people you were making demands of?
Oh gosh, if I told you, I would break that. We'd threaten, boycott. We'd physically threaten. Can I tell you something here? Maybe I shouldn't. When we met, Ricardo Montalban film people had carrying him around here and saying, oh, he's the man, you know. And they had this organization called Nosotros, that's how I met Ray. I was in this meeting, and everybody was expecting this Ray Andrade to come and show up and break up this meeting.
What was Nosotros? What kind of organization?
It's an organization of actors.
Okay.
Of actors, Hollywood actors.
Okay.
Who Ray said they anybody in Nosotros would sell their mother for a part. Even if it's just one of those CC senor with a sombrero, or a lady with a shawl, with a crucifix, stereotype, the harm you do to our children is immense, that's what was fighting. He didn't want any money, he didn't get paid. He was just serious about this thing. Mm-hmm. He's a good leader, and his military training taught us discipline. If he wanted to meet at 4 o'clock in the morning, that's the way it was. If you didn't go there, he would come for you. I said, what's the matter with you? You know what I mean? My wife would go crazy sometimes. Because he used to work at night and sleep during the day. And here, I said, everybody, you're crazy, Ray. Everybody's different, man. Everybody works in the day and sleeps at night. I don't care if we have to do something at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's the way it's going to be.
So you were beginning to tell me the story about that you were in that meeting and they thought he was going to interrupt.
Oh, Ricardo? Yeah. So anyway, Ricardo gets up and starts talking about his organization, Nosotros, and how good they're doing and how well they're becoming acquainted with the Hollywood people. And Ray gets up, and with his combat jacket, the same old combat, big long red hair, big mustache, and tells him, sit down, you punk, you sissy. He says, what makes you think you're a spokesman for the Chicano community? You're not even a Chicano, you're a damn Spaniard. That's number one. Number two, he says, you're full of crap. These people aren't paying attention to you. You're just a token. A token, and you're making money, and so you think that you are a spokesman. And these other assholes, and this big meaning, there was a lot of writers and journalists and news people and cameras were there, And they started to shove Ray down, and he didn't care. Some of us went, hey, no, I want to hear from this guy. I don't want to hear from Ricardo. I want to hear from this guy, what this guy's got to say. A lot of people started to go on Ray's side, and so did I. So I said, I got to meet this guy, man. This guy is serious. Not fooling around, So I met him. I made it a point to meet him. And we got along. And he was a fan of my brother's. Can you believe that? When he was a kid, when he was boxing. Because my brother was very much involved in amateur boxing. Like I did become later too. And And he liked him, and so we got along great. Before you know it, I was chairman of the board of Justicia. And we went to all the directors. If I told you stories about with the great, what the heck's his name? Clint Eastwood. And Charlton Heston, you would not believe some of the stuff that we got. And they'd pay attention to him because he was serious. He went to NBC, and he would not meet with just ordinary any person. He wanted the top brass. If no top brass, no meeting. That's it. I don't want to talk to flunkies. I want to talk to the main man. That's it. If that isn't it, I won't waste my time. He knew how to do it. Oh boy, that Charlton Heston thing was fun.
What was that?
We were in this meeting with the Hollywood Producing Guild, directors and the producer guild. And we walk into this meeting, it was just Ray, myself, Paul Macias and Joe Hernandez, just four of us. And we were protesting against that movie, the violent movie by Peckinpah. What was it? Jeez, I kind of remember these things. It's been 20-something years. Gosh, I forgot the name of the movie. But it was about these American Anglo guys that go into Mexico and single-handedly kill hundreds of people with none of them getting hurt at all, and not even their hats knocked off their head, and again the women either prostitutes or going to church, you know, and the peones all teach me and you know all this stuff. And we went to protest the movie. And there was a woman producer, I forget her name. She was in the meeting. And Ray never was the one that started the meeting. He would have either Paul or me start the meeting. And so Paul gets up and starts telling these producers and directors that they had better change, you know, do this. And Peckinpah, he says, he's supposed to be a violent man. He's not a violent man. If you want to see violence right now, there's only four of us here. We'll show you some violence right now. If you decide to have to see real violence. And this kind of scared him, you know what I mean? These guys are serious. And they were all real with their ties. And they offered us hors d'oeuvres. And we wouldn't eat or drink. You know, there's some drinks if you know. No, we don't drink that. We don't drink with our enemies, do we? Yeah, Ray was something else. Anyway, Paul said a couple of bad words. And this lady producer got up and protested. She says, Mr. Macias, I don't think we have to use foul language. We're all ladies and gentlemen here. And you can talk to us intelligently, and we can get to meeting like that. And Ray jumps up. Do you mind if I say a couple of things there? You know what?
No.
It's off the cuffs. It's off the... Just shut up. God, he tells her. This lady producer. And you could feel the shock of this whole actors. Clint Eastwood and Ricardo Montalban, all those guys, you know, all of them were there. They wanted to hear this. He said, we're not here to give you an orgasm, he tells this lady, producing highway. I was even getting shocked myself. I said, and he turns around to, no, and then Charlton Heston gets up. And he says, Mrs. Sarnoff is right, Mr. Andrade. We don't have to use foul language in order to get to... We're all pretty intellectual people around here. And he turns around with Charlton and says, sit down, you big sissy. He says, sit down. If you're not ready for this meeting, he says, and the way this meeting is conducted, you're not running this meeting. We're running this meeting. You understand? If you're not ready for it, you go take a pee or go do whatever you have to do. And when you're ready for this meeting, you come back. And Charlton Heston couldn't believe it either, you know. And he turns around to Clint Eastwood and tells him, and you, he says, I hear you're the biggest ass kickers of Mexicans in the film industry. Is that right? He says, I'll bet you what I'll do, he says. He fumbles, he's an actor, you know. He fumbles and gets this big worn out wallet of his. He peels out a $20 bill. He looks in the scene for everybody's watching, you know. He takes out his $20 bill. He lets it dry in front of Clint Eastwood. He says, I bet you can't kick my ass. And this threw everything at done. Oh, that's not enough for you? He says, I'll tell you what I'll do. He says, if it's not enough for you, $20 in chump chain for you, but my friends here could come up with some other, a couple more dollars if you'd like. You couldn't kick my butt. You couldn't. And he just stared right at him, man, and Clint Eastwood was just, you know, just quiet. Telling the truth, right? And he said, okay, can we go on to the meeting? The woman stopped off. She took off. She didn't want to hear more of this. But the rest stayed. The men stayed.
And how long did the organization last, Justicia?
Well, it lasted 73. Uh-huh. 73, when police busted into the headquarters that we had on Huntington Avenue, yeah, and confiscated all his papers, and somebody bombed his. They had a lot of people to go. You know, Nixon didn't want any secret organization having any power or any strength. Ray was getting too strong. Wasserman of Universal Studios, and everybody was just listening. I got the job at ABC because we met with the ABC people from New York at ABC in Los Angeles here. Alton Rule, who was the president at the time, and all the people. My boss became John McMahon. And we went in there, it was 30-some demands. And one of them was that you hire a community affairs director that can see to what the needs and wants of the community. And I was selected because of my past experience in television, and because Justicia pushed it. There was 14 other people that applied for the job, but I knew I had the job before going in.
What year was this?
72.
Mm-hmm. So going back a little, when did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in 1947.
Uh-huh.
When I came back from
the service.
The north. As a lumberjack.
Right, right.
I met her at a football game. I was playing against her boyfriend, Oscar Gallego, who was a big star at Garfield, a big halfback at the game. And we met in April and got married in November.
And how?
Quick romance. And we've been together 47 years.
Which neighborhood did you first move to after you got married?
We lived with our parents in Maravilla, they call it's on Gleason and Eastern, near Mariana and Eastern.
And then how many children did you have?
Three.
Uh-huh.
Three, two girls and my son.
Mm-hmm. So once you were at ABC, what were you doing? What kind of work were you involved in?
I was involved in everything to Chicano, Mexicano.
Uh-huh.
They would I would get criticized for not going into the black community. Well, I'm not black. I was hired to work in the Mexican community.
Right.
And I almost got fired several times over that, but that's I was non-condescending, nor would I give in.
Mm-hmm.
I had my boss, John Severino, was we had a hate-love relationship, but he respected me and I respected him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was.
I'm remembering some pictures of yours from the Rose Bowl. What were those of?
The what?
The Rose Bowl.
Oh, yeah. We my brother was the first one to broadcast the Rose Parade bilingually and in Spanish on kind of Channel 9.
What year was that?
God, I went 55, something.
Uh-huh. What was that like? Did you go out with him for that?
Well, I was with him for four Rose Bowls in a row.
Uh-huh.
Four Rose Bowls. We'd stay up all night and set up all the equipment and then what we had to use by 4 or 5 in the morning. Stay there all day till Zorba come home. Enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. I'm gonna switch direct subjects again. All the activities then that went on in the 60s in terms of for civil rights gains, how do you feel afterwards looking back on it? Has it been successful, the things we were working for?
We, as usual, got a lot of people hired and a lot of things done. But the it's a no-win situation because these owners and executives, they'll take all you have, and they've got so much money and so much power that they will do this and do that to pacify you.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, they will jump back right back mm-hmm. to the way it was before. It's just the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, I was at ABC Tuesday. Because the one that took my job, but she doesn't do the same thing I do. The public affairs director donated $500 to a group, Friends of the Library group that I was president mm-hmm. for a while, and they're all dissatisfied. Even the workers. Television was taken over by business people. In the late 70s and early 80s, you know. And as business people, that's all they think about, the bottom line. They
mm-hmm.
don't care about the community or different ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
They do a little bit, but not enough. They never will. You have to own these stations. That's sort of thing that's going to happen.
This is going to be a difficult question, but looking back also, since you've been in L.A. over so many changes, what have been some of the most striking changes that you've experienced or that you can see that have happened to L.A. socially, culturally, you know, even geographically, the buildings?
The phenomenal growth of this city. I saw it when it was kind of big, but no, it was nothing that this proportion. The coming in of so many people from not only from this country but from all over, and the different changes in the way they feel as Americans. I'm very proud to be an American, even if I'm told Mexican. And I fight for that, and I'm known for that. But I'm very proud to be in this country, because I've traveled to Europe and I've traveled to Israel and I've traveled to Mexico, and there's no country like this. Really, there you stop to look. I've never gone back to the East, so I don't know about Japan or Korea or China or none of that. I'm sure that there's no country like this in the whole wide world. I really do. And even though I may fight some of the things that they've done here, it's still a shame that to see some of the newly immigrants. We, as migrants, I don't consider our... here we go again with my radical thinking. I don't consider myself an immigrant. I consider myself a migrant because I came to Mexico, occupied Mexico, and as an occupied person living in an occupied Mexican, living in an occupied country, I still like America.
How about the city in particular?
It's too big now. It's too big. It's too confusing. Too smoggy. It breaks my heart to have to go to the bank and to the market, to the library, and to see these poor so-called Hispanics. They're not as I'm very adamant about that. I don't consider myself an Hispanic. With their customs and their culture coming and just disrupting all of the things that we have tried to combat, and just going back to the same. I see us going back another 50. These new immigrants have put us back another 50 years. Of what my brother and I were doing in the Ray Andrades and other, people that worked hard to change. Just going back, immigrants, they have no, in general, not everyone, but they have no concept of rules and regulations. They jostle you off the line. They will park anywhere. They get upset when you try to tell them something that you're wrong. They're not wrong. You're wrong. So many things, societies. Problems. Not you're afraid to go out. I'm actually afraid to go out at night sometimes, so I don't go out at night. I really am. A couple of times that I've had meetings at the library, and I leave the house here at 7:30, 8 o'clock. I'm leery, Sujin. I really am a little leery. I stopped the other night. I was a little leery for a meeting. I stopped to have a cup of coffee and a donut here on First Street, my old neighborhood, where I thought I was king there for a while, I'm first engaged, and I was afraid. I got a little there. Well, maybe it's my age, but I've calmed down so much now, I was afraid. Kids just running around wild, drunks. It's horrible. No like it. It's changed a lot. And all the work that's been done seems to be for naught. Mm-hmm. It's too hard. Too hard.
I think we should end it here because I've been here longer than I thought. Is there any last words you'd like to make?
No, thank you very much. I enjoyed being here.
Thank you.